Well, thank you all for coming back. And you're a good example for those who are still eating in the refectory. Now, there's a good old word, refectory. So we're going to invite Tim back to further probe some of these issues and to appreciate who we are and who he is. And maybe we can see more of each other.
Wonderful. All right. Okay. So those were pretty much all of my remarks to lead into our time this morning. I do want to tell us a little bit about the compassion practice and teach us this this method called Taking Your Pulse, which is an acronym that I'll tell you about. But I think maybe we should do that in closing. So if there's any questions now, would be the time to maybe come up and we can see if there's a little dialogue that will ensue from those. So I'd open it up for that right now, and then we'll go in there, that way. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Do you want to say that in the mic?
I think it might be interesting to know what other people found or obstacles in dealing with this problem of compassion.
Does anybody want to throw out an obstacle? We can do it popcorn style if we want. I know that we need recording. Yeah, go ahead. Ego. Nailed it. Fear. Another good one. Lack of trust. Mm. Projections. Physical fatigue. Yes. Mental fatigue. Compassion fatigue. Yep, nice. Empathic disorder fatigue, yeah. Yes. Wounds, oh yeah. Yep.
Thank you. I'd like to answer that question too, because what I find is when I get into the sympathetic nervous system and I get into fear and flight and all that kind of stuff, I can't do this stuff. It's when I can shift myself into the parasympathetic nervous system that I can do all this stuff. Learn a little bit more. So I'd like to ask you, so what I'm obsessed about the parasympathetic nervous system and wanting to get there. And I saw a lot of the things you were talking about as being connected to the parasympathetic nervous system. When you talked about I think it was Paul, and having to go and talk to the other non-Jews, I saw that as connection, and that comes out of the parasympathetic nervous system. And I've forgotten all the rest. So I was wondering if you could talk about the parasympathetic nervous system and how it relates to all the stuff you've been sharing. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Well, John came up to me at the break, so we had, you know, he had mentioned the parasympathetic nervous system. Well, so what he's describing basically is when we get activated in a situation of fear, we are hardwired because of our evolutionary biology to go what is called the sympathetic state, into the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight, which is a natural, you know, that feeling when you're driving your car and somebody just barely misses you and your whole body just tingles real fast and you kind of on high alert. That is the sympathetic state. So I think what happens is, like I was trying to say, in our society right now, in that empathic sort of disorder fatigue, we are activated in that state more often than we probably would like to be. And so there are ways for us to deactivate that. We can actually, he's raising his hand, we can actually control that in a sense. So there's all this research that's coming out. Some of this, Kristen Bell, who's Rob Bell's wife, has recently talked about this on his podcast. If you're interested in this, you should go listen to the two episodes of what's called the Robcast. There's a two-part thing on anxiety. So some of the interesting things that are scientifically now proven is laying on your right side, for some reason, can activate the parasympathetic state, moving out of fight or flight back into that place of calm. Jumping in cold water can also do that. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Listening to music that's like 70 BPMs a minute, Mozart. Your heart will actually sync up to that and bring you back into the parasympathetic state. Contemplative practice is another one that you know, connecting with that sacred source of compassion that we talked about is another thing that can, especially through controlling your breathing, can bring you back into the parasympathetic state. So if you find yourself living in a place of anxiety or panic, there's a few things that you can do to bring yourself back into the parasympathetic state, which is the state of calm, the state of compassion. So,
yeah, I was wondering whether you heard about heart rate coherence,
mm-hmm.
because what heart rate coherence does is indicate to me when I'm in the parasympathetic nervous system.
Yes.
And the thing is that there are things I can do
right.
to help me shift into, one of which is this very special form of breathing. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, John.
This is not as technical as that question, but the term compassion, it almost seems like it's something that God forces you to do. You don't even realize you're doing it. It just seems like, can free will be involved in that, in compassion? Or I just wish you would expound more on what compassion is.
Sure. So I think what I'm hearing in your question is that, you know, there's an element of, can we choose to act compassionately rather than be forced into it? And so we're playing with this idea that, like I had said, metaphysically, we're already always connected to one another, and so there's a feeling with that we already feel, right? But that could also mean something more than compassion, right? It could be empathy. It could be love. It could be a number of different feelings that we feel as we're all connected, right? So the same system that would say that we're all interconnected metaphysically would also say that the system only moves forward by a free will scheme, too. So this idea of every moment is open to the future, you know, like we saw in the big picture that Carlo Rovelli painted or in Whitehead's Metaphysics, would say that every moment of our lives is a moment of decision. So yeah, just as we talked about the parasympathetic state and the sympathetic state, and we can choose to get ourselves out of it, I think that we cannot choose to be related or connected. That's just our nature. But we can choose in what way we relate to one another. And so as we live in this time of wanting to be maybe cultivating a deeper sense of compassion, that our contemplative lives are hopefully pointing us in that direction, you all, again, would know far better than I, having walked in this way and practiced this for much of your lives, that the kind of fortitude and that your free will decisions over your life has forged in you, right? So that I think that the more that we can choose it as a free option to connect compassionately, again, not empathically, but compassionately, that over time that those choices will become less difficult, and that the state of compassion or the state of being in the parasympathetic nervous system will become more natural to us. So that's how I would respond. I don't know if that's helpful, but yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Judith?
I'm a little confused about the difference between compassion, empathy, and love.
Mm-hmm.
So could you just address that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. So empathy, again, is when you have the cortisol released in your brain because you're feeling pain, right? And it doesn't have to be your own pain. It can be that you're feeling the pain of another person. And so that is something that sort of gives you the ability to feel the pain, but it's also kind of a toxic feeling, right? It's the feeling that something's off, something's wrong. Compassion, as contrasted with that, would be when you release a sort of oxytocin release of calm and love. And if you've ever been in a time of contemplation where you've sort of felt like a warm ooze, you know, just kind of come upon you, or a sense of release, a sense of freedom. So I think compassion is when we transform our experience of pain or suffering with someone else to a place of reconciliation. We reconcile that, or we redeem that, or it becomes met with that sacred source of love. So there, you know, love we could define, I think, you know, one definition of love that I like is by another process theologian named Thomas J. Ord, but he says that love is acting, I would fill in the blank here, compassionately, because he said empathically, but I don't think That's exactly what he means. Love is choosing to act compassionately on behalf of oneself, the divine, or another, to bring about an overall greater good. So that's one way to talk about it. I would also talk about love in terms of my own philosophy as a way to describe our relationality when it is in harmony. So love is what we mean by being in relationship when it's in harmony. And so compassion, I think, is something that we can call ourselves toward and participate in that's beyond empathy, that leads us to live in a deeper place of love. So that's how I would talk about that.
Yeah. Hi. Just missed, you recommended the two podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't,
yeah.
Wait till I get back to my seat.
Okay, you want to write it down?
I didn't get it down.
If you all have questions, yeah, come on up. Okay, so I'll say that podcast again. So the name of the podcast, you can find this on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, any other podcast platform you might use. You can find it online, too, just on the website. The podcast is called The Space Robcast, and the two episodes are called Anxiety Number 1, I think, and Anxiety Number 2, with Kristen Bell, who's his wife. So you'll be able to find that pretty. It's probably only a couple of weeks old. So The Robcast, Anxiety Number 1 and Number 2.
Thank you. I really, really like that distinction of empathy with the cortisol and compassion with the oxytocin. It's really powerful. Thank you. In the schools, I'm a teacher in the schools, there's a lot of talk of teaching empathy, which is kind of now putting another twist on this for me. So something else I was making a connection with was, I don't know if you know Anthony DeMello, who talks about being dispassionate. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, now I want to go back and read and look at Anthony DeMello. I'm thinking that maybe this dispassionate stance that he advocates for mm-hmm. is perhaps very similar to the empathy piece. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go back and look at that.
That could be great. Yeah, and I just want to just name that confusion between empathy and compassion is so normal. It's just very common. So the distinction is semi-new in terms of the research, because you've all probably heard empathic disorder fatigue, more commonly just called compassion fatigue. And those terms have been conflated for some reason. But the reality is that again, not only are those two different states that we can be in, but that we actually have to work, I think, to be in that place where compassion is a state that we don't get left in empathy fatigue. You know what I mean? So like that, you know, the Buddhist monk was saying that, like, you can't just tell me to do an empathy meditation and leave me there. I have to do compassion afterwards. Otherwise, I'll be in that sympathetic state of fight or flight, and just you'll leave me there. You know, so it's a little bit of work sometimes, I think, you know, but it's a helpful distinction. Thanks. Hey, Marcy.
I just wanted to share a compassion story that happened on the way to Word and Life this morning. I was running a little late and on the freeway, and as I got to Garden Street, suddenly all the traffic stopped. I thought, wow, now I'm going to be really late. And so I stopped, and I thought, try to get over towards the exit. And then this other car pulled up right next to me, and we both were kind of stopped. And this little dog came running along, a little dog that was on a leash that was loose, a little like a schnauzer or something. And we both kind of looked down and, like, do we get out of the car? What do we do? And meanwhile, you know, there'd been a fender bender because of this. But the dog just, you know, ran right by really fast and kept going. And I looked, and the traffic was still stopped. I looked back, and all the cars were stopped on the freeway, and people were getting out and trying to get this dog. And I got choked up. And I'm trusting that the dog was found. But, So when you were talking about this, I thought...
It's beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it's great.
Wonderful presentation. The questions you've asked, you know, you talked about this interrelationality framework, the God, the sub, the human, the individual level, which is how I'm interpreting it. And my question to you is, yes, we can be in compassion, but also receiving compassion. Like, if it's interrelational, it's two or three or whatever. And so there's also a requirement not just to give compassion, perhaps, but to be open to receive compassion because it is interrelational. And I just wondered what you would speak to that, because we are the God on earth. We're the hands and feet of God in motion. So if you could comment on that, receivership of it and being open to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. So that's beautifully said. Thank you for sharing that. So we all have probably had moments in our lives where we were the ones who were suffering, right? Where we were the ones who were ill or in pain, hurting from perhaps the loss of a loved one. And we were met not with empathy, but with compassion, right? And what that feels like is the difference between somebody saying, oh, I'm so sorry you're suffering, right? And somebody who showed up and somehow just provided a presence of loving welcome to us in that place. I have a friend who ended up, just had a really difficult story, ended up losing her brother to cancer, and then had a health ailment of her own, followed pretty quickly after that. And she tells a story about when one of her pastors came in and just sat with her and rubbed her feet, right? That's not empathy, that's compassion. That's sharing the good, you know, and loving sort of energy of compassion, that release of oxytocin that can come from somebody who's honoring your hurt and maybe not only suffering with it, but actually offering a healing sort of thing. So I think for those of us who are hurting and we're trying to be who we need compassion, we need to be open to that. I think just recognizing that it's not about someone only sharing in our pain, which is also good and can also be healing, but somebody who meets us with a restorative presence in any way is also this move of compassion. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
So it's hard for many people to be vulnerable to receive that. So I'm kind of, it's not a mental posturing, is that we need to be, I guess I'm asking, because there's probably a lot of people in this room right now that need compassion or support or caring or kindness or, you know, I mean, we are human beings. So that we can send compassion, but there also needs to be this posture of letting others be present to us. And there's not, how do we expand? Because I think compassion needs a container. Compassion just offered could be like water on a pavement. If I'm not porous to let people... So I'm just curious of what you would say. I understand the sender perspective of compassion, more about the receiver, of how you really do that and open yourself, because vulnerability, weakness, and maybe you don't have that answer. We're just all struggling.
No. I think that's also well said, so thank you. I think part of the work of the spiritual life over a long period of time is to open yourself to that. And some of that is contemplative, opening to a sacred source, but some of that is, I think, the harder work for those of us humans is, which I'm pretty sure everybody human, is to open to that from one another. Remember some of the obstacles that people named already? Fear, past wounds, you know what I mean? Like, when we hurt, we sort of curl up around that, and we harden up, we wall up. And the work of vulnerability that you're naming that's so helpful is to get back to that tender place of being open to the world around you, which is already, again, our nature at a deep level, but is hard work for us. We talked last night at the Way Collective about how we're sort of born in mystery and wonder, and then we sort of get tribalized into, you know, biases and walls that we create, and how do we protect ourselves from the other group and the other people. And then we have to come back to our own mystery and our own wonder later in life. And that's, I think, the work that you're talking about, that I think is contemplative work. I think it's work in therapy. I think it's work in body, and how do you physically present yourself can also, your posture can actually invite that compassion. So there's a number of things we need to do, but it's a slow, intentional work. Yeah, sure.
Years ago, I finally realized that the phrase we grew up with, it's better to give than to receive, was actually mathematically impossible. No. And so, you know, like you're saying, being open to receiving is the other half of the equation. It has to be there. Otherwise, people don't get to give.
Yeah. Thank you.
I don't really have anything incredibly wise to match anything you said today. Just wonderful. I've enjoyed your presentation so much.
But I doubt that, but thank you.
I do have one thing. You had described what love was.
Yeah.
And I've actually been like, what the heck is love? I've been worrying and wrestling with that for years.
Yeah.
And Richard Rohr, in the last few months, gave a definition which I absolutely love, way beyond love is some kind of decision or love is some kind of resonance.
Yeah. Yep.
And his was, it's an open state with no boundaries. Yeah. Love is an open state with no boundaries.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm back to, because I also absolutely love this one where you said, God is the loving and just interrelationality of all relations. And it brought to mind instantaneously the prayer that Wolf and Lisa, and I don't know what their last names were, but a couple of Native American wise people have come and spoken with us a few times. And Wolf and Lisa, when they do their sweat lodge, or I think probably when they wake up in the morning, or any other time when they open their eyes and wake up, so to speak, their prayer is, all my relations. So
beautiful.
It isn't just sentient beings.
Oh, yeah.
It's rocks and it's the air we breathe. So the loving and just interrelationality of all relations. God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not relegated to people. Absolutely not.
As you were speaking about the difference between empathy and compassion, you were giving examples of like cortisol versus oxytocin, which kind of, to me, is very inward-turning. It's quite individual. In my work as an anti-nuclear activist, I'm trying to get people to adopt accountability partners or emotional support partners, team of two partners, because the news about nuclear stuff is so bad that I don't think anybody should try to just work on that issue by themselves. So I'm wondering, what role do you see for friendship in the unfolding of the heart, the unfolding of the spiritual life?
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, yeah. Well, I love your work. I have a bottle opener on my keychain that it says, beers, not bombs. It's made from a disarmed nuclear weapon. So I'm with you in that. Thankful for your work. It's great. So I think that as we were just reflecting on the nature of being open to compassion from another, one of the ways we most experience the sacred source of compassion is in the treatment of another. And so I think friendship is one of the ways we most know God, in a sense. I think especially in a committed friendship over a long period of time. Many of us know this in our partnerships, maybe with our partner. And that commitment to love, when I do premarital counseling, I say, You know that, like, in getting into this, you're committing to all the future iterations of this person without having any clue who they're going to become, right? 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 Yeah, you're laughing because you know it's true. Yeah. So that, but that sort of fidelity of love, I think, is where we most come into contact over time with this idea of compassion in an embodied way. Because for some of us, although we might have sort of contemplative or mystical experiences of sacred compassion, it's very ethereal. It's very evanescent. You know, it comes and goes, right? The feelings that we have come and go. And so when we can look into the eyes of another who's shown up for us over a long period of time, I think that is one of the ways we most believe in compassion. So thank you for bringing that up. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I'm aware that you're breaking new ground with the Way Collective by emphasizing what you do more than what you believe. Isn't that right?
Precisely.
Yeah. It's an action or activity oriented group. And my question to you is, what about, I'm a big fan of the Golden Rule, okay? Mm-hmm. And to me, that is not doctrine. That is action. That is love in action.
Yeah.
The message is the same, though the words we use may differ. The message is the same. Take a walk in others' shoes. See yourself in others' faces. Just imagine trading places.
Yeah.
The Golden Rule's the same the whole world through. How does that fit in with empathy and compassion? Maybe that could be your question.
No, I mean, it seems to me to be from the Christian tradition, it seems to be a religious mandate of this imperative. So the idea that we're called to compassion, that it's our essence, that it's the ground of our world, that it's a divine and sacred source, and that we have also this call. I mean, I think Jesus perfectly sort of encapsulates that in that Golden Rule. And for him, you know, it's the sort of transfiguration of his whole religious tradition, right? It's this summing up of 613 commandments in the Old Testament and just this one imperative. So yeah, if we had to not choose five practices at the Way Collective to live out together, but one, I mean, that seems to me to be the distillation of what that, you know, very core. Yeah, no, absolutely. So thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Okay, I think I'm going to call us to close here in a sec, but I want to do a couple things before we do that. One is share the pulse practice with you of doing compassion, and the other one will be just singing a prayer at the end, if that's okay. So I mentioned earlier the compassion practice. So half of my doctorate at Claremont was rooted in this practice as a sort of ministerial methodology. And it comes from, he's the head of our program out in Claremont. His name's Frank Rogers. So there's a book on this if you're interested. One is called, I think, just The Compassion Practice. And the other one so that's for sort of a trans-religious community, so it's a different application. But there's also one called, I think, Compassion, the Way of Jesus, which is basically all the same content, just appropriated for Christians. So if you're interested in that, many of us have, you know, we've been talking about even in the Q&R right now that that it sounds nice to be compassionate, but when rubber meets the road, it's a little bit harder to cultivate. And so this is a simple practice. It's an acronym called Taking Your Pulse, P-U-L-S-E. And so this is called taking a U-turn when you sense yourself maybe even feeling a little judgy towards somebody who activates you, maybe makes you uncomfortable, somebody you despise in the media, I don't know. Right? Here's the practice. This is the challenge of taking your own pulse. The first step is paying attention. So sort of allowing into your awareness this person who's difficult for you or whose behavior or attitudes have triggered you. And for a moment, sort of imagining that person and the behavior that they've done that feels difficult in your imagination. And ask that person to recede into some sequestered room or something like that, or away over the horizon, or into the light of the sacred would be another way to do that. So you can feel safe from their presence and influence right now. Then we turn our attention inward, and this is the paying attention, and notice what the feeling or sensation or internal movement that person activated you with is. Like, what is the emotion? What is the deeper thing within me that's being activated by this person? And try not to be taken up into its power or to suppress it or to deny it or to judge it or anything like that. But simply cultivate a non-dual or a non-judgmental awareness of it. One way to do this sometimes is to let it personify itself and just and not say that I am angry, but my anger is here or something like that, right? Anger is here. So that's the first step, is sort of starting to name that, pay attention and see what that deeper thing is in you that needs to be named. And the second step is understanding. So it's inviting this reactivity to surface the threatened need or the tender wound or the secret shame or the stifled gift that's underlying this reactivity's intensity, right? And so if it's helpful, at this point you can invite it to express itself as a person, like I said. And so there's a smaller acronym here that goes with this step called FLAG. So what's your deepest fear? That's the F. What's your deepest longing? That's the L. What aching wound was stung by this other person that still needs to be heard within you? That's the A, aching wound. And the G is, what hidden gift feels stifled and frustrated by this experience? So that's understanding, working towards understanding that impulse within you. The third step is loving connection. So it's really letting yourself feel that sense of compassionate connection to whatever part of you surfaces from within. So simply love or care for this part of you that emerges, just as you would love a wounded or frightened child that needs care. So it's tending to it, right? Not judging it, not trying to push it away, but just pretending or almost sensing that this is a, you know, one that you love who is hurt and how you would treat this person. So that's kind of moving in loving connection toward that part of yourself. And the fourth step is sensing the sacred. So at this point you can sort of, if it feels right, invite an expansive sense of sacredness, right? That connection with the sacred source of compassion that we've been talking about today. A healing light or a soothing breeze, or the presence of a divine figure, or a compassionate ancestor, or something like that, to be with this part of you in whatever way feels healing and life-giving. So there's this invitation of another. It doesn't have to be shored up and defined in any way. Just whatever sacred source of compassion you find to be helpful for you, invite that sort of sacred source. And finally, the move after this work of paying attention and understanding and loving connection and sensing the sacred is to move out of that place of reaction and reactivity to embody new life, to embody a different posture in the world as you go forth. So notice any new life or perspective that's emerging within you, and not only allow for, but I would actually say invite this gift to flow throughout your body and into every part of who you are. And so when we feel that reactivity, the anxiety that might well up, or even if we're feeling empathy toward someone else and we're kind of left in that place of being a little disheveled, this is a way for us to take a sort of pause from that, withdraw into a place of internal meditation. This can be done in an actual meditation over 20 minutes. It can be a quick, you know, a couple minutes away, you know, you need to go take some deep breaths and just sense what's going on, why is this here? And the outflow of this is hopefully to not only take your pulse, but to move from that place embodying the new life and the new, more compassionate posture. So that's the, again, this, you can find this online. You can get the book. It's really helpful. And it's also, this is just one part of a larger compassion practice that can become an orienting device for your life. And so that's that. So yeah, so hopefully it gets a little practical for you. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Should we sing our prayer? Do you want to do any announcements? Okay. All right, so I don't know if you all can read this. My hope is that some of you at least can. At least I know Paul and I know this a little bit from our Wednesday nights. But maybe before we do this, I had a few people come up to me at the break wanting to know about the Way Collective, which is our community. And so a few details. We meet on Wednesday nights at 5:15 p.m. at First Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, which is on 1915 Chapala Street. It's just on the corner of Chapala and Pedregosa, right not very far from here. We meet at 5:15 for dinner. People trickle in over the next hour, coming from work and everything, getting their families. And at 6:15, we start a dialogue that includes some contemplative rhythm, some teaching, some conversation, some reflective and musical movement, as well as a long dialogue around the theme for the evening. And then we sort of share the collective wisdom and do some blessing of one another at the end. So if you're interested in coming to join in on those conversations, there is so much resonance with this group, with that group. And I was sharing with Judith and some others during the break that you might be, there's no surprise that we both value the same things, but you might be surprised at the 20 and 30-somethings who are wanting to live into this path there. So if you're interested in seeing that, and 40 and 50 and, you know, and so all the way up to 80, 90-somethings, you know. So we have a community that spans that age gap. So and we're pressing into very similar things. So that's the information about that. You know, as Tom mentioned, there's no belief statement. There's a being statement, though, right? So, cool. So this is a translation of the Lord's Prayer that you, I don't know if you recognize that already, but it's sung on a five-step scale. Every line is sung on one note. So it'll start with do, next line will be re, next line mi, fa, so, and when you hit so, you go back down. Down to the bottom again. So we're going to try this right now, and it's an interesting pacing because you're just sort of saying the words on that note, right? Don't worry about the timing, you know, or the rhythm. And this is a way for us, this is how we close our gathering each time at the Way Collective, and then I'll give the blessing also after that as a sort of benediction that we do at the Way Collective as well. So I'll see if I can hit C on this piano so that we can kind of have a note in our minds. That's my thought. Is a little higher. All right. So let's let this be our prayer. God in us, through us, and all around us. May your unspeakable name be revered. Now here on earth may your commonwealth come. On earth as in heaven may your will be done. Give us today our bread for today. Forgive us our wrongs as we forgive. Lead us away from the perilous trial. Liberate us from the evil, for the kingdom is yours and yours alone. The mercy is yours and yours alone. The beauty is yours and yours alone. Now and forever, Amen. Now here on earth may your commonwealth come. Here on earth may your dreams come true. Alleluia. Alleluia. So now go and bless the whole world, for we are all connected. Say yes to your life's adventure, noticing and cultivating beauty as you go. Cover one another with friendly presence, laughing with those who are joyful, and crying with those who are in sorrow. Eat with anyone and everyone, always assuring that those without have enough. And love with courage. For love is the only way forward, and you are loved. You are loved. You are deeply loved. Always remember that there's grace and beauty in the becoming. So go in the name and peace of Christ. Amen. Thanks for having me, everyone. It's been really fun.